All right, so here, you'll notice there's a continuum. What I want you to do is I'm going to quickly describe what the research says. Now, I did this just quickly to tell you, I started teaching high school, and I was so excited to teach because I was sure that the kids would be excited to learn. And when they weren't, it really caught me off guard. I mean, I was determined to be the best teacher, and I was creative and all this stuff, but they weren't excited about it at all. So I started on my quest to find ways to make learning more happier, more appealing, more effective. And when I stumbled across learning styles at Seattle Pacific University, they had a master's degree in it, and I didn't even think twice. I just signed up and found the research. I was able to study with a couple primary researchers and others. So the research that this is based on is solid and empirical, but if you were going to go to that research, it's really boring. It's like you rent a place on the intellectual cul-de-sac where few people live and even fewer people visit. And that's all you have time to do is do that. So I did that for you. I was on the intellectual cul-de-sac to get some deep empirical research. And then I translated it into terms that everybody, you know, bring it out to the street where everybody lives. I say that because it's very important that you understand that every book I've written, everything I tell you, this is not original with me. It's not original research. It's good, solid, empirical research, which, by the way, I used in China in July of last year with Focus on the Family China. It was all Chinese, all interpreted, all translation. These were people that came from China, had never heard of learning styles, had never done anything with it before. We got into groups like I do in the States after 2 7-hour days where they got with like styles. And when they came up to share their results, it could have been from Scottsbluff, Nebraska, or Chicago. Their responses to this and their ability with this was identical to the United States, which tells me that this research is solid, it goes beyond geographical boundaries, and it transcends race, creed, color, gender, all sorts of things. So just so you know and understand that there were things about it. I got a great teaching degree from NNU. I love NNU. There's absolutely no complaint about the education department in any way. I thrived, and I think I was a better than average teacher getting out there, but it still wasn't enough. And so what happened was when I started bringing this back into the classroom with my high school kids, it just revolutionized the way I taught, the way they learned. And then when I got to thinking, because as you know, being in the church all my life, how do we make Sunday school more interesting? How do we make youth groups more vital? The teaching goes across the board, that this will help you in preaching, teaching, leading. If you can get a handle on some of the learning styles part, even though you may not be able to do it, you can't really stretch too far out of your own style, you can teach in a way that others can learn, and it's pretty exciting. So here's what I found out, and there were things that surprised me, so don't get ahead of me. I'm just going to quickly describe, and then I'm going to ask you at the end to put a mark somewhere along the continuum where you think, you know, if I just had to please myself and nobody else, this is where I would fall. Okay, that's where you should put your mark. For example, this first little section is how you concentrate. It turns out your environment is very important for how you concentrate. So some of you are at your best early in the morning. How many of you are best early? Me too. We could have started this workshop at 6 this morning, and I would have been great. Get it over with, because the afternoon is horrible for me, right? And I go like a house on fire till noon, and then I'm pretty much done. I have to be doing something I really care about or doing something I'm involved in. Otherwise, I fade out. How many of you are night owls? You do your best work late at night, sometime after 10? Yeah, you can go till 2 in the morning, and you get great ideas. You can't call anybody, but you have all kinds of great, great ideas. Here's what they found out. If you do your hardest things at your best time of day and your easiest things at your worst time of day, that one adjustment alone can literally double your productivity. The things that you dread the most, save them, do them at your best time. The things that you like to do and enjoy doing and you're good at, put those off till your absolute worst time of day and you'll still do them. That one little piece alone, where would you put yourself between early morning and late at night? Where are you at your absolute peak, your absolute best? The second one, eating and drinking. A lot of us grew up where you can't eat or drink when you're in class. But what the research shows is that about 30% of the population actually works better, learns better, concentrates better with something to eat or drink. Not necessarily a meal, a bottle of water, a little bite of Chex Mix, red licorice. You know, it's why we serve refreshments for youth groups and donuts for Sunday school. I mean, not everybody wants them, but for some people, they actually do better, and others are actually distracted by it. So between those two, where would you put yourself? Does it help you while you're concentrating if you have some snack, something to eat or drink, or does it not? By the way, this is a problem in a lot of churches as far as, you know, no food or drink in auditorium, right? I'm a person who, if I don't have food or drink, I'm pretty distracted. So I try to be a mature adult. If I go to places like churches or somewhere where they say no eating or drinking in the auditorium, I finish my coffee, I go in, I sit among other mature adults, and it's only a few minutes before I'm thinking, oh, I wish I'd brought the big purse. Something in the big purse, a bottle of water, and pretty soon I'm asking the adults around me, do you have a piece of gum? Pay attention. I will. How about a breath mint? I just need something in my mouth, and then I can pay attention again. Well, what we find is, of course, whether it's a church or whether it's a school, we're kind of paranoid about custodial things because the janitors kind of run the place in some ways. So you can't have messes. You can't have stuff on the carpet. And I was doing a family seminar at a Christ the King church way up near the Canadian border, and they're in a big warehouse. And they were getting ready to move to a new building. Well, I walked in, and the family pastor was there with me, and I was kind of walking the whole auditorium. They have 3,000 people that go to that church. And when you walk in that church any time for any event, they have big urns of Starbucks coffee and ice water, always. So there's always coffee. So when you can just imagine what the chairs padded like this and the carpet, which was kind of beige, coffee stains everywhere, right? And I said something to the family pastor. I said, whoa, you got a lot of coffee stains. He goes, yeah. He said, you know, last Sunday during the pastor's sermon, he said, he stopped in the middle and he said, you know, a lot of people have asked me, Pastor, when we get our new sanctuary, will we still be able to bring our coffee in? And the pastor said, he leaned toward the congregation and said, I want you to read my lips. We want the whole county to come spill coffee on our seats. See, the point, who's the customer, what's the point? Is it worth it? Take up an extra offering for the extra custodial if you have to. But I guarantee you, kids or adults, there will be some people. If you are going to keep them out on that, you would think that's such a small thing, it's no big deal. I'm telling you that for 30 to 40% of the congregation, it is a bigger deal than you think. And why start out with hard feelings when it's so easy to come up with some kind of accommodation? If you're not a person who needs it, you may not want to think about it. But if you're a person who needs it, you understand it. So it's an interesting point. If you look at the next one, the light, the lighting, it matters. Bright light, dim light. The only light that's bad for everybody is, guess what? The one you're sitting under right now. Fluorescent lights. And I think most churches, most businesses, most schools have these banks of fluorescent lights. And they've actually proven that for some people, it will actually bring on epileptic seizures. For me, it was migraine headaches when I was teaching under them. Others, it can actually bring on learning disabilities or make them worse. And it's not like you can redo your fluorescent lights. I mean, you can't just suddenly, it's too expensive. So there are ways. There is a USASkylight.com is the company that for churches and Christian schools, for nonprofits, they give a pretty steep discount. And what they have is light diffusers. And they take panels like this, whatever your panel sizes are, and you can get like clouds or desert scenes. For most of our classroom makeovers, we've done, for instance, clouds. And you put them up, you take that down and you put the other one up. It's like $20 per panel. And all of a sudden, you go from this pasty white that we all are right now, unnatural, to your pink complexion. And there's this visible, lack of tension and relaxation and just visible difference in how they concentrate and listen to you, just for a lot of people with the lighting. If you can't do that, you can turn off a bank of lights. Sometimes you can put tissue paper in if the fire department will let you, because it doesn't generate any heat, but you just have to get permission. You wouldn't think it'd be such a big deal, but again, it stands in the way of a lot of people, children and adults. This small little thing called lighting, who would know, right? Why is it such a big deal? Just pay attention. Don't you understand? We're talking about the gospel of Jesus Christ. Why does the light matter? Well, because, for one thing, the brain can only absorb what the seat can endure. So if I am physically uncomfortable, all I can think about is that I'm physically uncomfortable. Right? And that happens in school over and over and over again. shouldn't it be at least once a week, I, as a kid or an adult, look forward to coming to church? I can have coffee. I can sit in a place with that doesn't irritate my eyes. I can do so many things and actually learn and concentrate in a way that makes sense to me. Not always practical, but it's worth thinking about. Where would you put yourself? Do you like, other than fluorescent lights, if you're working, do you like to have a lot of light? Or do you kind of like it at a diffused level? Where would you put yourself? The settings. We've always been told that if you're really going to be serious about study, and if you're going to work on workbooks and worksheets and other things, you should be at a hard surface, a table, chairs. At home, you should have a desk and a bright light and nothing to eat. You should have a, and that works for a percentage of the audience, a percentage of the population. That works really well. Again, 30 to 40% of us, it's the worst thing you could do. I can sit at a desk for as long as I have to sit there, but I'm not working, just waiting for my time to be up. I'm really uncomfortable, and my butt hurts. I really just want to be anywhere but here, and so what's the point, right? What's the point? If you know that you work better on the floor or in the beanbag chair or at a Starbucks, that's where you should do your work, not Sunday school at Starbucks. But you know what I mean, if you personally. And then when you're going to have a variety of environments for kids or adults, you just want to have a little bit of flexibility. Pad the seats. Maybe for those who need the hard surface, I've seen some churches that have, they got a hold of some of the chairs that have the pop-up things like you did in lecture halls in the college. Or they get like a little hard surface that they can write on. But it does matter. Does it matter to you? Where would you, for the formal desk or chair, is that what you prefer when you're studying or working? Or do you like the floor, the sofa, the bed, other comfortable places? And then the last one, this surprised me most of all because temperature. There, two-thirds of the population can adapt. If they're too hot, they just adapt. If they're too cold, they adapt. One-third of the population cannot adapt. This is the part that I am in. We are terrible. We're either really sensitive to cold or really sensitive to heat. For me, it's heat. If I'm too hot, I can't think about anything else. Wow, it's hot in here. Okay, well, we'll see if we can. Oh, you don't understand. I'm hot. I got sweat. I can't think of anything else. If you're teaching a group and you see somebody fanning themselves, can I just tell you this? They're no longer listening to you. All they're thinking about is, I'm hot, and my mind is completely gone because the heat is overcoming me. Now, fortunately, two-thirds are still with you, but that third is gone. And then the other part of the third, those that are sensitive to too much cold, the air conditioning, in the middle of July, they got a space heater under their desk, they're wearing a sweater in the classroom. When the boys were younger, I kept them, well, they were in Christian school, and we kept them in separate classrooms, different teachers, for the teacher's sake. And Robert's teacher called me, he was from fifth grade one year, and she called and she said, no, it's not about Robert, no problem there. She said, but I wonder, she said, his classmate, Sam, he's just having so many problems. He won't listen in class, he won't do his assignments, he won't pay attention to me, he won't respond to me in discussion. He's disruptive to the max. And she said, we've tried everything. We've tested him for ADD and ODD and dyslexia, and he doesn't have any of those. She said, I just don't know what to do. Would you come and do your elementary level learning styles assessment and see if we start from there? I said, okay, we did it. So we came in, and before I did the assessment, we always do a little sentence completion. And so Sam finished most of his sentences the very same way. I would learn better in class if it were cooler in this room. I would be able to do my studies in class if they would fix the air conditioners in the portable. I would listen to the teacher more effectively if the room wasn't so hot. I mean, every single question, right? And the teacher and I, we looked at each other and we said, it can't be this easy. But we went to the dollar store and we bought a little battery-operated clip-on fan and we clipped it on the side of Sam's desk and we turned it on and he went, and started paying attention. We tracked it. It was a full 80% improvement. We were all panicked. We thought it's neurological, it's psychological, it's behavioral, the kid is just in trouble. And no, for Sam, he was miserably, overwhelmingly, uncomfortably hot. And as soon as he wasn't hot, he wasn't even a problem. It's not always that easy, but what if it is? What if by taking down some lines of first defense environmentally, it actually helps the kids that we're teaching, as well as the adults that we're teaching, to now that they are physically more comfortable, they actually start listening. They actually start gaining the information. If you're part of the two-thirds where it doesn't matter, just put yourself in the middle because you can adjust. If you can't adjust, if you're too hot, mark toward the cold. No, let's see. Mark toward the hot. Global, I didn't look at it ahead of time. And if you're like me, mark toward the hot. And if you're like my friend Debbie, who wears gloves through all summer, mark toward the cold. Now, would you take just a minute with the people around, right around you? Would you compare your chart to theirs and see if it's alike or different? You work at Starbucks? I can't do anything. All right, so let me ask you this. How many of you had something different than somebody around you? You had something different. So which one of you is normal? What if there isn't any normal? What's the best way to concentrate then? It's the way that works, right? It's ridiculous that in education, whether it's Christian education or any education, we don't ask and answer one really important question. What's the point? The point is you need to learn and finish your homework. Great. How do you want to do it? And as long as it is within the boundaries, I'm going to let you try a few things, because what if a kid just can't pay attention? I mean, when middle school, for example, does anybody work with middle schoolers? They're in horrible transition and flux and stuff, and they're not going to be all traditional and sit still and do anything. Most kids aren't. So what if we start taking down some lines of first defense and we still hold them accountable, but this time they actually start learning it instead of just behaving the way that we are always conditioned to get them to behave. All right, let's look at this part. We talked about the auditory, visual, kinesthetic pieces. Well, let's look at them a little more specifically to find out, how will you know that you're dealing with an auditory person? Remember, this is an auditory person who needs to ask questions, who needs to hear their own voice say it. They need to talk. And you'll hear them use auditory words when they talk to you. For example, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? Listen, can I just tell you one thing? It's listen, talk. Hey, I heard something, and I want to know if it's right. Oh, hey, you said something in your sermon. Said, heard, ask, tell, talk. All of those are auditory words that you can clue in right away. This person does not want me to draw them a picture. They need to talk to me, and then they expect me to talk back. Not as long as they're talking, because they would still rather talk more. But if you're an auditory leader and pastor, and my pastor admits to this too, if you're auditory, you would expect other people, when you talk to them, to talk back to you. But what if you have like a real non-auditory person, and they just say, yeah, that's true. Well, what do you think? I think it's fine. This drives an auditory person crazy. Because if you ask them what they think, they would love to tell you what they think. But you won't talk. And to them, talking means that you got it. And if you don't talk, you don't have it. Well, one guy came in, one dad said, I am an auditory person. My daughter will not do what I tell her. And it's just simple stuff. He said, you know, I told her over and over and over again, put your dirty clothes in the hamper. These three things you do before you leave school. Over and over she won't do it, and I say it lower, slower, and I say it louder, and we yell and scream, and she just won't do it. He said, and I finally figured out, she's visual. He said, so I went home and I put a sign, clean clothes and an arrow, dirty clothes and an arrow. He said, on the back of her door I wrote the three things that she has to do before school. He said, it was like within a week, the clean clothes, dirty clothes were there, the three things. He said, she doesn't hear it. I can say it 25,000 times. and it doesn't register, but in the visual. And he said, you know the best part? He said, a week later, I came home from work, and there was a little sticky note on the refrigerator with the words, I love you, Daddy. Visual. I will write you a note. I will draw you a picture. I may not say it. I may never tell you I appreciate you or that I love you as a kid or as a person. Maybe if I'm highly auditory, you'll always know what I think of you because I talk, talk, talk. If I don't, you may never really know what I think of you. I'll write you a note of encouragement, or don't take offense just because, you know, if I'm a highly visual kid and I've got an auditory parent, you know, I go downstairs and my mom says to me, hey, I need you to go to the kitchen and get that blue mug that's by the side of the sink and take it out to the white table on the patio. I say, okay. And as soon as I turn around, I think, oh, I don't remember exactly what she just said to me. But I don't want to go back because she's going to say, see, you never pay attention, and why? How many times do I have to tell you? And those are the things you hear auditory parents say, right? But what if she says this? Listen, I need you to go down to the kitchen. You know the blue porcelain mug that's sitting right by the sink? Pause, pause, pause. What am I doing? Yeah, and then I say, oh, yeah, because in my mind I can see that blue porcelain mug. I need you to take that mug and take it out to the round white table on the patio. Pause, pause. What are the chances now that what I just told her to do, she will do? Huge, right? But we have to, even in our preaching and our teaching, you can't just say it several times. For the visuals in the place, you have to give them a picture. In their head, you have to, wait, slow down for a minute, and say, you know, you understand, you remember that Chevron station that's not a Chevron station anymore, and now there's just a picket fence? And people are going, oh, yeah, the one that's kitty corner from the new hotel. Yes, that's the one. So you get agreement and nodding, so now they're with you, they're tracking with you. If you don't get me tracking with you, I just give up. I can't follow what you're saying. I don't even know what you're talking about, right? But for the auditory, if I don't let them talk, when I say, boys and girls, let's talk about it, we're going to talk about animal cruelty, that just means that they're going to talk about it. They're not going to listen to me because they've all got stories to tell. But what if I have a little egg timer and I say, we're going to talk about animal cruelty, would you just take a couple minutes and check with the kids around you and see if someone knows about a story or what they know about animal cruelty, and you wait for the 2 minutes to be up, and they talk, and then when it's done, they come back and they listen to you. Because they know in about 10 or 15 minutes, you're going to give them another chance to talk to each other and then come back. Now, when I had you share your responses the first time, not everybody needed to do it, and you don't have to, but some of you just sat there and listened to others, and that's fine. But some of you, you thought of something while I was talking in the very beginning that if you have to wait an hour to say it, it's going to go away. So it was important to you to be able to take a minute, just a couple minutes, talk, discuss. Now you've got it out there. Now you come back and now you listen. If you keep somebody for an hour, hour and a half, it doesn't matter what their age is, and you know I'm telling you the truth because you've experienced it already. If you keep them for a full hour without ever giving them even a chance to talk to each other or to shift in their seat or to write something or to do something or to see something different, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them. All right, so where would you put your auditory piece? How big do you think your auditory piece is? Visual. How will you tell you've got a visual person? Remember, the auditory person says, can I talk to you for a minute? Hey, listen, and can I ask you, and will you tell me? The visual person says, can I see you? Hey, would you look at this for a minute? Is this the right thing? Can I show you? Let me just show you this. And this is, they're always going to be looking for, I see what you mean. You know, I can't picture that. I just can't see that happening. They're going to use see and picture and look and see. So you know you're dealing with a more visual mind. It won't help you to say it 25 times. You've got to get into the visual. I was in Columbus, Ohio, speaking to a group of student leaders, and student body president from Columbus High School came up afterwards, and he showed me this incredible picture that he'd drawn. He said, Mrs. Tobias, I want to show you this picture that I drew while you were talking. And I went, oh, that's very nice. He said, you're thinking I wasn't listening, aren't you? He said, if you ask me any question about anything you said in the last 45 minutes, I would be able to look at my picture and answer any question you ask me. He said, but all I've ever heard from my teachers and my parents all growing up, put your pens and pencils down, put your paper, you look at me when I talk to you, look up here. He said, if I can't draw while I listen, none of it sticks. Now, here we thought that if you're drawing and doodling and not looking at me while you're talking, that you aren't paying attention. Sometimes that's true, but a lot of times you're drawing because it does help you pay attention. We think if kids talk too much or people talk while we're talking, it's because they're being rude and not paying attention. Sometimes that's true, but sometimes it's a great compliment because they're talking because they were paying attention. And in order for them to remember what you just said, they just need a minute to just sort of digest it and say something to somebody and whisper, and then they're all right and they're with you. So visual, show them something as soon as possible, and give them a chance to track with you as you're talking. Where would you put your visual puzzle piece? How big is it? Put a mark somewhere there. Kinesthetic, I would say probably these days you have even, and you guys that are doing youth know that it's probably even higher than 45% of kids that are visual. I mean kinesthetic. They have to move. You cannot set a youth group down and expect them to do anything more than 3 to 5 minutes before something has to shift. For those of kinesthetic, I don't say, can I talk to you for a minute or can I see you? I'm going, okay, go, let's go, let's do it. Can I get back to you? And you go, I haven't even told you everything yet. Well, can you just talk to me and walk with me and keep me moving. As a kinesthetic person, I need to move. Even if it's just in a car sitting next to you, I talk to you better if we're moving. If you want to go shoot hoops with me, then I'll listen to what you're saying, if I'm a kid, right? I want you to just engage with me and give me something to do. Give me something, maybe you're passing something around, that it can land in with me last, so that I can just hold on to something, so that all I'm doing is kind of messing with it, like a bottle of water or a cup or something, and I'm just, you know, messing with it. Well, for some people, that just drives them crazy. Put it down. Stop it. Put it down. Pay attention. Okay, if I'm putting it down, then I'm done paying attention, because all the time I was messing with it, I was paying attention. But now that you made me stop, I'm not paying attention at all. It's, by the way, why a lot of people like to bring coffee into church. They don't even drink it. Some of them, they just hold on to it, because it just helps them concentrate, because their hand can be doing something, and then now their mind doesn't have to worry anymore about what to move. We watch a lot of kids in classrooms where we put the exercise balls instead of seats. And for some kids, not everybody, but for some of them, when they elect to sit on an exercise ball instead of a chair, well, they don't even know they're moving. Their whole body is there kind of with the balance ball. But now they're focusing and they're concentrating, because their mind no longer has to say, you're miserable, you can't move, you're uncomfortable. It doesn't even have to think about moving. It just focuses on what you're saying. Remove the obstacles for the highly kinesthetic folks. And you want to give them something to do right away. Here's a quick formula. If you're preaching and you wonder, how am I going to hit everybody? How am I going to hit auditory, visual, kinesthetic? How am I even going to know who they are? I can't give them a test, right? Here are three steps. Three things in every sermon that you can do. Give them something to talk about, something to think about, that includes picturing it, and something to do. Just when you get your sermon done, when you get your outline, do you have something for them to talk about? Not necessarily in church, but as soon as they leave, is there something to talk about? Is there something that you've given them to think about? And is there something they can do? Even if the doing is you're going to do it after you leave, you're going to take this and you're going to put it into action and it'll work today. It'll work right away. And you know, I never gave you a magic word. I didn't give you the magic word that reminds me in the plenary. Do you want it now?
Yes.
It's off the track, but I just realized. Little Miss Global going, oh, wait. There were 3 points and I only gave you two. Okay, so here's the magic word. Let's just divert for a minute. Because as long as we're talking about three steps, here's a magic word. If you use this word 8 times out of 10, and you can share with people that weren't here, okay? 8 times out of 10, you will get cooperation. It's a real small word. You know what the word is? Okay. Okay. Listen, my strong-willed niece, Tracy, when she was just 10, we get in the car and I say, Tracy, put your seatbelt on. No. Oh, this is my go-to-the-wall issue. I said, put your seatbelt on. No. What have I got now? I got nothing. I got a knockdown, drag-out fight that I can't possibly win, because she knows I can't hold her down and drive at the same time. So I say, fine, we're not going anywhere. Who just lost? That would be me. I just lost. Tracy, put your seatbelt on, okay? No. How come? It's too tight. I don't like it. Well, here, let's just adjust it, and then we'll put it on, okay? Okay. 8 times out of 10. It's a small little point. 8 times. hey, it's time to go, okay? Okay. Or, no, how come? I gotta get something to drink. Okay, quick drink and then we'll go, okay? Okay. It's amazing. You wouldn't believe how many emails I get from mothers of preschoolers after I've talked to them. You know, they go to pick up their kid in the nursery. The toddler, it's time to go, it's time to go. We're gonna go, no, 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 no. But you say, it's time to go, okay? Okay. It's pretty magical. It just doesn't always happen, but 80% of the time it does. Let's just practice that. Try it with somebody today, okay? Just once. It doesn't mean you don't have to if you don't want to. I mean, it means I certainly hope you don't choose to die, but I just need you to do this, okay? Okay. Most of the time, the okay, but you have to say it in a particular way. You cannot say, especially to kids, you can't say, oh, I just need you to do this for me, okay? No, that would be weakness, and I have to kill you. I don't want to. But you know, if you're weak and tentative with me, I have to fight my urge to destroy you, right? No, it's said firmly and kindly and courteously. I just need you to do it, okay? Yeah, okay. And you'll be amazed. Okay, so that was just free. So you got your three? Something to talk about, something to think about, something to do. How kinesthetic is your piece? Did you already mark that? Would you check with the same people just for a minute or so that you checked with up here? See where their pieces fall as opposed to yours. Visual, auditory, kinesthetic.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so I'll have to use this without a microphone. Let's talk about church boards or staffs for a minute. How much sense would it make to make sure to give them, to kind of go through this with them and to kind of see who are your high auditory, like you didn't already know that, but who are your high auditory, high visual, high kinesthetic? And then as you go to work through new policies or new procedures or new programs, you want to tap into the one saying, well, this is great, this is what we want to do. You're kind of the auditory person. What do we tell people? What kind of words do we use that are going to appeal to the auditory person for whom words are very important? That wouldn't be me that you would ask about that, because I mean, I'm a word person, but I'm not. It would be Jack. He would look at something and say, oh no, those, because the words mean something to me, he will say. This word says something entirely different to me. You need somebody like that on your team or in your board to say, let's run this past them and make sure that we're hitting the auditory learners right where they are. You need a visual person for obvious reasons, as we talked about. The naming committee needs visual people. You say, well, how, for those of you that are real visual, what kind of marketing would appeal to you? Should we do it through the smartphone? What would the posters look like? What kind of picture do you think we should choose? That's the visuals forte. And you should be tapping into that strength, because if you try to do it all and you're not very visual yourself, then you're going to spin your wheels and you're going to spend money in the wrong direction. For your kinesthetic, you want to be sure and run it past them, because you're going to say, what do you sense right away? What do we do to implement this? How do we get people excited about this? And they're going to give you some sort of action that you need to do right away. Otherwise, the kinesthetics, you're going to lose them, right? So try to surround yourself deliberately with people that are not exactly like you, but you can just, by tuning into people and how they talk, you can pick up a lot of what they are. Does that make sense? All right. Now, the analytic and the global. These are a little bit harder but even more critical, especially when it comes to preaching and teaching. If you are going to reach everybody, first of all, it will be impossible for you as the speaker to do everything. You can't be everything. But you can be aware of everything from the standpoint of saying, well, what I would say to my students, you know, because I was so global in a lot of the analytics, and I would know, I just can't turn into an analytic person. I do my best, but I speak the language with a distinct global accent, and I'm not very good at putting together something for analytics. So when I'm talking to them, I would say, okay, for those of you that need a lot of detail, hold on a second. Let me just paint this big picture first, and then I'll fill it in. Well, you could see visible relief on analytic faces going, oh, good, she knows it's going to drive me crazy. And then it ended up not driving them crazy, because there's something about having it validated and saying, okay, then my expectations are a little different, because you've already said it's probably not going to be as detailed as you like, but let me paint this broad brush and tell you where to get more details. Then the analytics will go, I can live with that. Because the analytic person is the one thinking, where did you get that information? Well, where was that article? Well, what was the reference? And the globals are going, it was a red cover on the magazine I read. I'm not exactly sure. So first of all, I mean, you're going to want to do more homework, anticipating that probably close to half of your congregation is going to ask for that sort of stuff. And you don't have to be real good at it. You just say, and if you're the analytic preacher, you're saying, okay, for those of you that are a little bogged down by detail, hold on, I'm going to give you a few details, and then I'm going to show you how it fits into the big picture. Well, then you've bought some time with me, because then I'm going, okay, well, at least you know that this is not going to be my cup of tea. And then it ends up being easier for me to actually look at the analytic part, because I don't have to be resentful that you're not pleasing me. Do you know what I mean? So instead of expecting the pastor or the teacher to do it my way, the pastor or teacher recognizes that their way may not be equally accessible to everybody. They'll do their best, and then they'll tell others. You know, so just recognizing it. It's like when we first got the worship pastor many years ago, when they started standing, right, for the whole time. I got watched from the back, right? People shifting one foot to the other foot to the other foot. I mean, they're not worshiping, they were being resentful. So the worship pastor, what he did that very next Sunday, he said, now I understand that many of you don't like to stand for the whole song service, and it's okay if you don't want to. You can sit down and stand when you want. Well, there were a lot of people that went, fine, as long as you know I hate it, I'm good with standing. Okay, whatever. It doesn't make sense, but it's human nature saying, as long as, you know, I know this is tough for you. I'm so sorry. I wish we could do it a different way. That is huge. You wouldn't think so. It's huge saying, I know you'd like more detail. I wish, I'm not as good at giving it to you. I'm sorry. Well, sure, I understand. It'll be all right. Then it's better than just plunging through my way and expecting everybody to get it and being frustrated with the people who don't get on board. Let's look at the analytics, how you'll spot them. How many of you already know you have a whole church full of analytics because they have been critics? We think they're critics. But one of the things that I noticed as a teacher, and I didn't know and understand this for the first 4 years, the analytic global. I'm real global, and I didn't know how much I irritated my analytic learners. I would rearrange my classroom periodically, because I like it to be different, creative, flexible, go with the flow. So I would change the order of the chairs, and they would come in, and they would say, where do I sit? Anywhere. It's a butterfly today. See, we got two wings, and you could choose a chair anywhere you want. Where do you want me to sit? I don't care. Choose a wing. Choose any part of the butterfly. It's just different. Then they would start going around going, where's the desk I had yesterday? They would notch their chairs. The analytic. This is my pew. This is my seat. This is where I go. This is what I do. Am I staid and, you know, crotchety about it? Well, not normally, but you change everything. You're always changing things. Whereas the global says, you never change anything. If you could just have a little creativity, if you could have a little flow. But the analytics, I found out that what I needed to do, you know, I was good at spelling, and I was helpful. I always wanted my students to be able to remember how to spell tricky words, like cemetery, C-E-M-E-T-E-R-Y, not A-R-Y. So I would say, you know, remember when you were little and your mom played with your toes and this little piggy went to market and this little piggy stayed home? What'd the last little piggy do? Well, this little piggy cried E-E-E all the way through the cemetery. Analytic hand goes up. Yes. I don't understand what a pig would be doing in a cemetery. I know. I said, well, why don't you just forget it then? And he said, look, no offense, I just have a harder time remembering the story that goes with it. Could I just have a list of words? And I'm thinking, a list of words? How boring would a list of words be? Oh no, one man's boredom is another man's security, right? That's what I discovered as we went. I thought everybody would want to be creative. I would say, you know, write me a paragraph about tooth fairy. How many words? Blue or black ink? Do I have my name on the right-hand side, left-hand side? Is it folded in half this way or that way? Is it due at the beginning, middle, or end of class? Whatever. You need to relax. I found out. One man's boredom is another man's security. It wasn't about relaxing. It's just that what is it supposed to look like? And I needed to give them a more structure, but not so much structure that the globals couldn't go ahead. And I was talking about to Jack this morning on the way here. When I was at NNU, Howard Miller, I'm not a good economics person or math or anything, but I got an A in Howard Miller's class. And you know why? Because he loved me and I loved his style and he loved every single one of us and relational, and I'll work so hard for you that if there is a relationship and I know that you care and value me, I don't care how hard it is to understand what you're teaching me. I'll get it because you understand me and you get me. My analytic husband, he goes, I never counted on that at all. If a teacher likes you, fine. If they don't, fine. Just do the work. It's a whole different perspective. Your analytics are coming up to you saying, I'd like more exegesis of the Bible. I'd like to know more about what does this mean and where did you get that and how do you know that? And then the global's going, you know, I feel like the sermon was so good I teared up at a couple places and I just felt like it touched me right where I live and so personal. And my husband's going, what does that have to do with anything? You sort of got an impossible job. You realize that, right? But it's really not impossible if you recognize it and you say, you know, for some of you this is going to seem pretty deep. So I won't spend a lot of time on it, but for those of you that would like to know what the reference is, I just want to tell you this is what we're going to do. Well, then there's an opening. For those of you that you'd like a little more personal and others of you that don't, let me just tell a quick personal story and then I'll tell you how it relates. Because the analytics were quick to tell me they don't mind personal stories or a joke or two as long as it's directly relevant to what the point is. They don't want the rambling. And with my analytics, if you say you'll do it, if you're going to do the flag salute at 9 and it's 9:05, where's the flag salute? You know. And when I did a class for one of the churches, they divided into analytic and global groups. And the global said, you know, we'd like to have a bulletin once in a while. And the analytics go, well, when you're late, you don't deserve a bulletin. And I have a theory about late. You know, you would think that maybe the globals are perpetually late, but analytics are late more often. Do you know why? Because when it's time to go, the globals can drop everything and go. The analytic cannot drop everything and go. You must finish what you are doing, wrap it up, and go. And if it's late, oh well, because it's not like you can just suspend your activity. You finish what you start. For globals, we don't finish one thing at a time. We have lots of different things going, primarily because we work by spurts of inspiration followed by long plateaus of nothingness. And if I'm only working on one thing in my long plateau of nothingness, I have no inspiration. On the other hand, if I have started several different things, if I have no inspiration for this, perhaps this one will inspire me. We found out with, and I know this to be, when I write books, I write them in Starbucks and airline clubs and stuff, because it's not like I need people to talk to me. I just need people around. My analytic husband is exactly the opposite. Don't talk to me. Don't be around. Put my headphones on. Have silence. He wants his noise, not anybody else's noise. But what we find for kids, like if they can't do homework and they're just real distracted, if I'm where somebody else is having more fun than me, I can't focus. I need a study buddy, or you need to sit down and you be working too. You don't have to work on my stuff, but let's just all work together and then I can focus and concentrate. Not the analytics. Get me out of here.
Is it okay to ask a question?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
If you kind of basically feel like you're analytic, but you really identify with the global also, is that maybe because you've learned to appreciate some of those other things, or
you're either really mixed up or really well balanced. No, what the research says, and this is the most solid research there is, because Witkin, who is a researcher, he did his research with the whole world, and he did it in a non-self report. And what he found is there is a continuum, so sometimes you are kind of in the middle, even though you tend to be more one than the other. But what's more common, especially for those in administrative, preaching, teaching positions, you can do global things for analytic reasons, and analytic things for global reasons. You think, okay, I know this person needs this, so that's what I'm going to do. And you can't be a pastor and not be organized to some extent. You know, but your library looks very different than the analytic library. The analytic doesn't know where. How do you even find things? You have all these globals we organize in piles, not files, and the analytics organize in files, not piles. For one thing, I can't remember what I called it. If I file it away, I can't find it because I don't remember what I called it. So I have to always pull up the search feature. The analytics are very good at time management organization and organization systems. And the globals, we buy those systems. If they want to have the systems, we buy it thinking that it will organize us. And after a while, we realize, I have to organize it, so that's not going to work. I'm never going to be a structured, organized person. So here's the test for organization, by the way. If you can find what you need in 60 seconds or less, you're organized.
That's right.
If you can't find it in 60 seconds or less, you need to redo until you can find it in 60 seconds or less. Again, you go, what's the point? The point is, I have to be able to find it.
I was just thinking, this is, and going back to the other, the four-year-old, it just simply goes back to respect. Respecting the other person.
Right. And admitting. I mean, you're making yourself vulnerable to some extent to say, you know, this is how my mind works, and I realize not everybody understands that. Because you get a lot of grace that way, rather than resentment. Well, I don't even understand. He doesn't even seem to like me. He doesn't, you know, she doesn't even talk to me. And she's, it is. The awareness, the honoring one another, preferring one another. I try to be more analytic when I teach because I know that I respect the analytics. They need an outline. But I know I don't meet their expectations because I get off track. But I do know if I tell a story, I'm going to bring it back in. You know, what you can do as you adjust and go. Yeah, make sense? The analytics, they're focusing on details, doing one thing at a time. They like to work alone. Even in sports, analytics tend to be drawn more to individual sports. They didn't like study groups in college because they figured it was a bunch of globals sucking information out of the one person who worked. They don't want to do team sports because you should be every man for himself. You need to succeed. Golf, swimming, tennis. The individual sports, you don't have to pick up the slack for somebody who's slacking off, right? So, but the globals, we love team sports. All for one, one for all. We get to win as a team. We get to lose as a team. We get to collaborate. We like group projects. We like to work with each other. And the analytics are going, just leave me alone for a little while. No offense. Again, it's not personal. It's not relationship-oriented, but if I have to learn this, if I have to study this, you're going to have to leave me alone. We're, of course, offended, the globals. No matter what you say, we're offended to some extent. But it helps if you explain it. The preferences, analytics want an orderly process. We were just in Riggins, Idaho, Sunday, to meet an old friend of Jack's who is now a pastor at a community church. And when we had lunch with he and his wife, I noticed during the church services, it was a great church, but nobody said amen, and nobody raised their hand, even though it was really inspiring at different places. I mean, it was like, and for a community church, I mean, the people were wonderful, but, and at lunch, he slipped and let something he said explained it all. He said, look, I don't go in for a lot of the folderol. God is an orderly God. Okay. I've been through talking. God is an orderly God. And he's a wonderful pastor, and people love him. And it doesn't matter that he doesn't, because he compensates for it in other ways, but it explains a lot. He has trained his congregation what to do and what not to do. You have a powerful influence over those you teach and preach. And we figure out right away what you value and what you don't. So if you don't value what I am, and you don't ever recognize it or even draw attention to it, I'll probably leave, unless my kids really like it there, and then I'll stay, no matter how boring you are. But, and you're not boring. But because I'm seeing you through another screen, and you don't ever seem any other way but that, I'm thinking, I guess I have to go find another church, someone that's more like me. Well, that's never going to happen, really, because no church is going to be just like me. If it was, I wouldn't be there, because I'm part of us yearns to have the opposite. But if you're an analytic person, this is kind of what you're doing. And you don't like having opinion expressed as fact. You don't want to deal with big generalities. And you need to understand the purpose. When globals were famous for saying, well, you know. No, I don't know. I got in trouble as a police officer because I would write my reports as though you were there. And then, were you more global or more analytic as a cop?
More global.
Yeah. I would write, and then the sergeant would kick it back and say, you know, you need to talk about this. And I was, well, you know, it's, oh, that's right, you weren't there. Okay. I got to more. It wasn't that I was bad and dumb. I was thinking the way I think. And my mind, and I would have to stop myself and purposely stretch. It's like another language that you adopt. And the more you can be bilingual or multilingual in learning styles, the more people you reach, even for a little bit, even if there's only just a part of how you approach in your sermon, but you know that it kind of touches. You know that the globals, they're going to want personalization. Maybe you don't have to do a ton of it, but if you don't have anything personal, no personal stories, no place where they could really just feel their hearts touched, they're going to go away disappointed, let down. For the analytics, you don't have to have your whole sermon be totally referenced and theologically and doctrinally sound, but if at some point you haven't at least demonstrated that you do, that you have studied and that you do know the Bible and that you're familiar with this, then the analytics are going to dismiss you as this is just fluff. They just don't preach the Bible anymore, or you know, you're going to have that kind of thing. So you're just, you have to try to cover your bases consciously, knowing that, okay, what have I done at the end of this sermon? What are the globals going to like about it? What are the analytics going to like about it? And what if I don't know? Well, I go back to my little advisory staff again. I get a really good friend who I know is highly global and a really good friend who's really analytic and say, let me ask you this. This is what I was thinking that I would do that the analytics would like. Is that true? And the analytic would go, no. Or, yeah, that's pretty good. I think I'd like that. Use advisory friends. Use advisory opposite styles. Run it past them sometimes, not every sermon, but sometimes when you're dealing with a difficult, controversial topic, or you're having a lot of grief given to you by a particular family or a particular parishioner who's just giving you nothing but grief, run it past somebody that you trust and that you know is a style that is more like that person who's driving you crazy. Say, listen, he's really analytic, and so are you, but you don't do nearly, you're not critical like that. How do I approach somebody that thinks like this? Take advantage of the people that are different around you. Look at the globals real quickly. We see the overall picture. We do several things at once, and we like working cooperatively. I want to work in projects. I want to work collaboratively. Preferences, get to the point without a lot of detail. And start at the end, preferably. If you could just start at the end and then go back, then I could pay attention. But otherwise, you're saying, okay, here's step one. So what does it look like at the end? Here's step one. But I just, what's it going to look like at the end? I'm going to tell you in order. That's my husband. I have steps I need to go through. But could you just tell me at the end what will it be? No. We're going to follow. Do lots of things at once. Because again, inspiring. And now, feel understood and appreciated. I can forgive almost anything. You know, maybe you didn't, your sermon wasn't all that well prepared. You said something that offended me. You know, if you love me, we have a relationship, and I know that you care about me, I can give you so much grace. There's a meme I put on my author page on Facebook a while back. It's a Mark Lowry quote that says, God's grace is a lot like a four-year-old spreading peanut butter. It goes all over the place. It gets all over everything. And that's just it. It's His grace that I give you is because I'm terrible at economics, but I got an A in Dr. Miller's class. Because he got so much grace for me, and he was so engaging, and cared about me so much that I didn't care how difficult it was. I would have done anything for him. Same thing. So maybe you're pastoring in a way that's not really, your preaching is not my cup of tea. But you love and you understand and you value me. And you know what? I'm going to be loyal to you, and I'm going to stick with you. and I'm going to give you so much grace because you're giving me grace. And the bottom line is the personal relationship. So who are you going to have more problems with leaving? I mean, it might sound logically like analytics aren't going to give you as much grace, but they're probably married to a global who will tone it down a little for you. The flexibility and variety is important to me as a global. Frustrations, have to explain yourself. Why do you feel that way? How would I know that? Not knowing the end result and listening to a lot of details. A while back in doing a group activity, the analytics and globals, they were supposed to say, you know, what they did best and what was frustrating and what they needed, and they got up and they shared their results. And the analytics were looking at the globals going, wow, you know, I think you're right. I think I need to learn to be more global. Why don't you, I think we need to learn from you. Tell us how to be more global. And the globals go, oh, never mind, we'll just do it your way. I mean, how, if you're global, how are you going to sit down and figure out how to tell the analytics to be global? It's not like you can teach the intuition. So that's a quick overview. And I hope that, I want to tell you this. I do believe that if we make our teaching and our preaching more about the individual, and if we really ask God's direction and guidance, we can't be everything for everybody. But we also can't make everybody the same. Why would you ask kids, do you want to go, if you're going to school, does school make them feel valued and loved? Does it make them feel special and valued? It doesn't. So why on Sunday would they want another day of school? They don't want that. We have to offer a world that's tired of the culture the way it is, or not, a world that doesn't feel understood. We need to make our place the one place where we can actually reach out. It goes across the boundaries, transcends race, creed, color, gender, religion, and politics, to understand the unique gift of individual that God has made of everybody.